You're listening to RTI.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad with me.
And me.
And Petra.
And Lee.
And Petra.
I am sure you have another really good story for us, so I'm prepared to hear it.
Well, I have. And I think, again, I don't make any apologies for using this story. I think, again, it's one of the most horrific stories we have. It's one of the cruelest, one of the most, well, cruel is the only word I can think of. And the person who's perpetrated it, forgive the wrong word, is Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, one of the most heinous, most despicable criminals that the UK and the rest of the world have ever witnessed. He took great pleasure in killing children, he and his partner, Myra Hindley. Brady's been in jail now for, well, for the best part of 50 years. He was actually came and operated his despicable wares in the area where I was born, in Manchester. And when the world says that when you're in a city, you're never more than 10 feet away from a rat, at that time in Manchester, you were never potentially more than 10 feet away from some sort of child molester or killer. I can prove that. If anybody in Manchester or in the north of England or anywhere else in the UK wants to take me to task on that, I can prove it. This area of Manchester was one of the most horrendous places for a child to be brought up. There were child molesters everywhere. I've researched it. I've written a book on it. I know the truth. But the king of the child molesting murderers was Ian Brady and his mole, Myra Hindley. And one of their most despicable acts after they killed a 12-year-old boy called Keith Bennett was to bury him in an unmarked grave. Now, they're the only people who know, certainly Ian Brady knows where that child's buried. And for 50 years, he's kept it secret. Not from the country, not from the world, not from the police, not from the courts, not from his psychiatrists. Although he's kept it hidden from all of them. But who he's kept it hidden from is Keith Bennett's mother, Winnie Johnson. Now, I knew Winnie Johnson when I worked on the Daily Star in Manchester in the early 80s. She worked there as a dinner lady, and I make no bones about this. She was taken on, she was given the job, she was chauffeur-driven to the offices and taken back or given taxis to get back and forwards to the offices. She didn't take a bus like all normal dinner ladies did. She was looked after. She was in the employment of Express newspapers and worked in their canteen. She was a lovely woman. Lovely woman. But there was this absolute abject air of horror and tragedy that surrounded her. She'd been given the job for one reason, and that was to keep her away from other newspapers so that the Daily Star and the Daily Express, the Sunday Express, could be the first with the news on her and her family. Now, that on the face of it might sound a bad thing, but as you know, I defend the press a lot. And I defend that. I defend that because what they were trying to do was help bring Brady and Hindley to court for what they'd done. They were trying to find the body. They were actually doing something that they could to help. And obviously the byproducts of what their endeavours were was going to be a news story. Anyway, to move on to the present day. Winnie, I think now, is 79. She's in hospital, she's not well, and possibly she hasn't got a great deal of time left. And what she wants to know, before she dies, is where her son, Keith Bennett, is buried on the moorlands on the outskirts of Rochdale and Oldham in Manchester, in the north of England. And that's all she's wanted to know for 50 years. You're a mother, Petra.
Mm-hmm.
How horrendous do you think that would be? That if a child has been murdered and the mother has no idea where that body is, she could never, ever say goodbye to her child. How horrendous do you feel that is?
Well, I must admit, this is the first time I'm hearing about the story. Not living in England, I had no idea, but I am, well, you could hear, I was just quiet. I can't believe this is happening.
That's
and,
right.
As a mother, I don't know, I would honestly want to know where my child is buried, no matter in what state, but this is, I just have no words to describe.
Well, that's it. Brady, he's now 74 himself, was jailed for life in 1966. And the murders that he committed weren't just Keith Bennett. He murdered a boy called John Kilbride, aged 12. He was involved in the death of Leslie Ann Downey. I've actually heard the tapes that Brady and Hindley made as they were torturing this child. She was 10 years old. And there was Edward Evans. He was 17. They'd made friends with him. And then they killed him.
Can't believe. I honestly can't believe this is still happening in the world.
No, well, that's it. But what worries me about this story, that's fine, because now they say that that Brady has revealed where Keith Bennett's buried. But the thing is, he's told somebody who had to be arrested in South Wales. Because for some inexplicable reason, nobody can get to the truth of where this child is buried. The moorlands, if you think of Wuthering Heights, most people know that story. That's the kind of area that Keith Bennett is buried in. The Wuthering Heights, the howling, screaming moorlands of Britain, one of Britain's most barren areas. And Brady knows, and apparently has revealed that. And yet nobody is passing that information on to this little old lady.
But why?
Why
they are not passing the information to her?
Because I'm not too sure whether this is the end game of Ian Brady's manipulation of the press and his complete disregard for the rest of humanity. It is feasible that Ian Brady is still, after all these years, playing games with Winnie Johnson, the mother of Keith Bennett. I think that is shameful. And I know we spent quite a long time on this story, but I think it is worth pointing out the paucity and the awfulness of certain human beings who've walked this earth.
Well, you know, when you're saying he's been in jail for so many years, do you think it's the right thing to do? Is it good enough just to put him in jail? I mean, all these parents, they suffered losing their kids, and he's just stuck in a jail enjoying himself.
Ashworth Hospital. He's not actually in prison. He's in a hospital, a secure hospital. Is it? To all intents and purposes, of course, it is a prison.
I think, but that Ashworth, is just not big enough punishment for such a person.
Are you advocating the death penalty?
Yes.
No, I think what you're saying is that it's a very controversial issue, and it's one that I personally have not particularly strong feelings about. I'm very ambivalent about. You're quite right. The idea behind the not having the death penalty, which is the way the circumstances are in Britain, is, in very general sort of terms, is that people who commit crimes can be regenerated. They can be reformed into people who can function within society and actually become valuable members of society. I'm not sure whether somebody like, well, I know, I would say categorically, a child murderer who went on to commit such awful crimes and is still keeping a vindictive secret from an elderly, not very well lady, maybe he should have been put down.
Well,
maybe he should have been killed.
It's like, you know, if somebody kills someone after so many years, it comes out of prison, he can do it again. So, I don't know.
Exactly. Rehabilitation is supposed to make you not want to do it, though. Rehabilitation is supposed to make you the sort of murderer who comes out of jail and says, I'm not doing that again. Mm-hmm. That was a horrendous thing I did. I'm going to get myself a job as a bus driver or an accountant.
I don't believe it. Once you do it, it's in you. I don't believe they will ever be good.
Excuse me, I was just having a drink then, sorry. Yeah, no, I agree with you entirely. And there are crimes that have been committed where really the death penalty perhaps should be something that is considered. Does Slovakia have the death penalty?
No, it's been stopped. We don't have it. And really there are big discussions about this because some people do deserve it. I mean, what, they're going to stay in prison for life, costing country a lot of money just for keeping them? And why? Because they killed somebody?
I agree. I can see exactly where you're coming from, and my feelings are ambivalent. I do believe basically within my heart that rehabilitation should be the first port of call on this voyage through despair and despondency caused by these kind of people. I do believe that people who commit crimes, no matter how horrendous, perhaps, should be given the chance to rehabilitate themselves and perhaps be able to give something back to society as recompense for what they've done. But if somebody like Brady continues to keep these kinds of secrets and to torture people from his cell within a secure unit in Liverpool, which is where Ashworth Hospital is, and as I say, I've been there, I've seen it, and it's not a horrendous place, it's quite plush. You know where, you know when somebody goes into a home, mm-hmm. you know, an old person goes into a home, and they have to pay £1,000 a week to be in there, because they're not very well, and the home's plush and elegant, and got everything you need. Basically, that's what Ashworth Hospital in Liverpool is like.
Yeah, and for free.
Yeah,
to him, it's for free, isn't it? Somebody pays and he gets it for free.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah, it is a strange thing. But anyway, let's move on. Let's move on to something a bit lighter. And it's something we mentioned this weeks ago, and it just looks like the world's catching on. I don't know if you remember, ladies and gentlemen, but probably about 3 months ago, Eric and I and Mark were talking about India saying that they didn't want the aid we were giving them. That they were doing quite well, thank you. Stop giving us money. We don't need your money. And yet Britain carried on, said, no, I'm sorry, we have to give you this money. And continue to give them £280 million a year. That's how much aid India, this fabulous, burgeoning, incredibly exotic and exciting nation that is making money hand over fist by introducing all sorts of innovative things. The country that brought the Grand Prix to itself last year. This is an incredibly exotic and exciting, and if mercenary is the right word, it's a mercenary country. It's a country that builds businesses and makes money. And for some inexplicable reason, Britain gives it £280 million a year. And guess what that's paid for the Indians to do? It's paid for them to be able to fly to Mars.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's the truth. And we said this weeks ago and everybody ignored us. Let me just read you the first couple of paragraphs to this story, right? Anger erupted last night after India unveiled plans to launch a mission to Mars while receiving £280 million a year in aid from Britain. The £50 million project aims to put an unmanned spacecraft into orbit around the Red Planet next year. The ambitious plan was announced by Indian Prime Minister Mahan Singh in a speech to mark the 65th anniversary of its country's independence from British rule. And we keep giving and giving and giving the money. I don't believe that we shouldn't give aid to countries that need it, but if they're going to fly to Mars, why have we got to give it to them? I think we should give money to countries that are undernourished, underfed, underdeveloped and everything. But when that country actually turns round to you and says, we don't want your money, we don't need your money, we're doing very well by ourselves, thank you, go and give it to somebody else, we should have taken the lead from what they say. And we didn't. So now they've used our money to fly to Mars. Brilliant. Well done, India. I think that's amazing. Right, we're going to move on. And I think now, well, we have to mention very briefly, right, that Andy Coulson, Stuart Kuttner, Greg Miskow, Ian Edmondson, Neville Thurbeck, James Weatherup and Glenn Mulclair, all members of staff at the News of the World, have finally arrived at court to face phone hacking charges. Once again, I'm not really going to say too much about this because I think everybody knows my views on it. These people are being hung out to dry for something that really wasn't quite as horrendous as what the police were doing at that time and what the MPs were doing at that time and what government ministers were doing at that time. And guess what they were all, who they were all doing it with? I'm not going to mention him, but we mentioned his name earlier on. He was certainly very friendly with Rebecca Brooks, who is also going to appear in front of magistrates next month on similar charges. I think it's a joke. Yes, what they did was wrong, but they should have been a bit more sensitive and they shouldn't have done the things that they are purported to have done. Phone hacking is a bad, 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 bad thing. But they didn't really destroy Millie Dowler's messages. They didn't do that kind of thing. What they went on to do was try and break news and try and find the victim of this crime. Didn't work. So let's move on then to Facebook shares and how I wish that Eric was here to discuss this, because this is so funny. Facebook shares have hit an all-time low as early investors get the first chance to get rid of them. Well, if you remember a few weeks when Facebook first floated its shares, and they didn't do very well, Eric explained it away very nicely by saying that, yes, well, that's the way things happen. But Eric, it hasn't got better, mate. It hasn't got better. They've hit an all-time low. What does that show? Is it just proving that fair weather friends just aren't profitable anymore? That people you don't really know and you send your pictures to and you reveal your heart to really aren't your friends? Is it that stocks fell 7% right on Thursday morning? Is it because people have caught on that actually these people aren't my friends at all? This is just a way of getting us to be used for advertising, for selling advertising space on the internet. What a joke. What a joke, honestly. And there's something here that I spotted early just before we came on the air. It's a question, and it's a question for all the listeners. And really, you should all write in and tell me what the truth is. There's the question. If all the nations in the world are in debt, where did all the money go?
To you.
Yeah, it went to me, yeah.
No, it's a good question.
Where is all the money? Did they put it, as the Indians put it, in a rocket ship and sent it to Mars? No, they haven't. Where's the money gone? If each country had its own little bank full of money, and they've spent it in the next country, and then that country spent it in the next country, the last country it got spent in must have all this money. But it hasn't. Who's got all the money? Who's actually got hold of all our money? Send your answers to Postcard from Poprad, and let's see if we can clear up this bizarre thing that the world has done to us again. The world's lost all our money. Talking about money, what about this bloke or this couple in Britain who've won £148 million on the Euro Millions.
But would you want such an amount of money?
Would you want it?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm asking. Would you want it?
I'd want, of course I'd want it. Wouldn't you want it?
No. Not as much.
Not that much. How much would you want?
1 million would do. I wouldn't want so much. It causes trouble.
Why? Why does it cause trouble? Because you can't shut your purse.
No, but people are jealous and they do all sorts of stuff to you. And nah, I wouldn't want it.
Don't you think they'd be jealous if you got 1 million?
They would, but not as much.
Not quite as jealous. So they'd only talk behind your back instead of mugging you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's one thing. There's an old English adage, which you've probably heard, and that is that there's one thing that money can't buy you in this world, and it's true. And do you know what it is, Petra?
Health?
Poverty.
Yeah, truth.
Money can't buy you poverty. And that would make me think, well, I think I should have 400. I'd love to have £148 million.
Yeah, it's a nice thought, but I always think to have so much money that it might cause you some trouble with people.
I tell you what, £148 million, I'm using my razor sharp mind now to work out the interest rate on that. And on an average interest rate, because interest rates in Britain are very, very low at the moment, I would say that that would earn you in the region of £32,000 a week. How many euros is that? That's like €50,000 a week, isn't it? Something like that.
Yep.
Right? Well, I tell you what, I'd take a bit of trouble for £50,000 of euros a week falling in my pocket. And while we're on it, you know, Eric still owes me a tenner.
Does he?
Yeah, from the Olympics.
Oh, okay. Did you have a bet?
No. I told him we could keep the baritone and the castrato, but I want the tenor back. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Right, let's move on again. Let's talk about the top Chinese politicians. Whoa, in a bit of a chop suey here, haven't we? Hey, I tell you what, have you heard this one, Petra, about the top Chinese politicians accused of taking part in an orgy after 100 naked photos went viral on the internet?
No.
Oh, it's very sexy, very silly. These high-ranking Chinese politicians have been accused of taking part in an orgy after more than 100 pictures showing 3 naked men and 2 nude women were uploaded onto a social media website. It's the China's equivalent to Twitter, and the pictures there. We've seen the pictures. There they are. They are in all their Chinese glory with the young ladies there, and tell you what, what silly billies, eh? Fancy getting caught of that. Then, do you remember a group called Whitesnake?
Yep.
See, I bet Whitesnake were really big in Slovakia, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the sort of band they were. Yeah, well, anyway, a pub landlady from Wales, which is, like, just down the road from me, is demanding more than £10,000 in compensation after she slipped on a puddle of puke.
Oh, fooey.
At a Whitesnake concert. And I didn't say puddle of puke. That's who that journalist who ever wrote that story said. It should be a puddle of vomit, ladies and gentlemen, to make it all more all the more palatable at tea time. Anyway, Lindy Butcher, age 39, hurt a knee, a neck, a shoulder. Blinky neck, how many times did she slip on that puddle of puke?
She might have done it on purpose, you know, just to get more injuries and more money out of it.
Oh, you can't say that. I'm sure you didn't, Lindy. No, that's a terrible thing to say.
But how does she know it was their puke?
Well, exactly. Well, that's a lot of injuries after one little slip at a gig in Newport. It was at the Newport Leisure Centre in, I think that's in North Wales, isn't it? Or it might be South. It's one of the Wales, anyway. And the 80s rockers who hits it. Now that's very appropriate, isn't it? She hurt herself quite really badly, done all sorts of damage to herself. And Whitesnake's biggest hit was Here I Go Again. Anyway, she's trying to sue him. She says it was horrifying. You don't expect to fall in someone's vomit at a White Snake concert. I'm sure you don't. I'm sure you don't. And then there's a bloke at the top US Scrabble player, right, who's been caught cheating at Scrabble. Well, how can you do that? Spelling's really important. Look at it this way. The difference between the English words one, right, O-N-E, and one, which is W-O-N, are Great Britain, right, let's put it this way. Great Britain has just won a gold medal. Australia have just won gold medal.
But you're laughing, but this is really difficult for us foreigners.
What, the way the English language is constructed? I know it's a
even red as a past of read and red as a color.
That's right, absolutely.
You know, you have to listen to the whole sentence and the content so you get then the word right. But it's for us foreigners, it's really difficult.
I think, actually, you've highlighted a point that is a really, really important point, and we need to make this point on RTI now as we come to the end of part two. I think that the English language is so complicated that you're quite right, it's very difficult for anybody to actually understand. But what it actually does say, that the English are so intelligent that they can actually understand the English language when nobody else in the world can.
You are crazy. That's all I can say.
Right, we're nearly there. So let's do the last story. That's Foxy and the Boar help kangaroo jump to freedom. I think this is an amazing story. These three animals, a fox, a boar and a kangaroo, have gone on the run together in Germany. They've escaped from a wildlife park. But what's fascinating about this story, right, is that, let's do it this way. Michael Hoffman, assistant head of the Hochwildschutzpark Hunsruck. Can you say that better than me?
No, I'm not even trying.
In west, it's west of Frankfurt, said on Monday that the male kangaroo was one of three that escaped overnight on Saturday. With the inadvertent help of... Oh, right, yeah, no, he said it's inadvertent. I don't think it was. He says the kangaroo got out of their enclosure after a young fox sneaked into the park and dug a hole next to the cage's fencing. Two of the three were then able to escape the park entirely through another hole that had been dug by the wild boar. So really, the wild boar and the fox helped these kangaroos to escape, and now they're jumping around Germany. I think that's amazing. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Petra and I are going to have to say goodbye. Thank you for listening to Postcard from Poprad. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you and goodbye.
From the heart of the earth to the world, RTI.